day, everyone. Welcome to the March 6th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne, and we've gathered the experts to talk tech today. Joining me in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls, Amos Aesop. Hey, Amos.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going wonderfully. How are things exigent?
Exigent. Things are good. We're all experiencing some of the tech kind of things that come along with a global issue that we have that we're going to be talking about later today, or maybe even all day. we are situated in a good spot, so nothing bad there, just fallout from some customer issues.
Are you do you deal a lot in fixing things like parts and things like that? Have you noticed there's any parts shortages or any hardware kind of things?
So
are you impacted?
I don't specifically. However, I did see a communication that came out yesterday or the day before that was sent out just to alert everybody, so everybody was just understanding of the information that there is difficulty getting things, and things that would normally be quoted as a 2 to 4 week lead time now we're quoting 12 to 16. And that's with high expectations that things will resolve themselves relatively quickly, and then stuff will get started back up, and then of course there will be that initial onslaught of everybody trying to get stuff that hasn't come over here in a long time. So if this 12 to 16 is our current estimate, but certainly could go longer.
Okay. John T. Meyer joins us from the studio over at Lemonly today. Hi, John.
Hi there. How are you today, Ken?
I am wonderful. You were just were you keynoting, or were you a guest speaker at a conference last week here in Sioux Falls?
Yeah, last week ClickRain put on their annual, it's called Trend Digital Conference, out at the Convention Center here in Sioux Falls. So I was not the keynote, but I was a speaker. A breakout talk about internal communications and how you need to make your internal team, your employees, your most important audience. So before you can ever do external communications, you first got to nail the internal part.
So I got a hard question for you.
All right,
because I heard about this because you made waves. It was a great talk, and it involved around things that you've talked about on this program a lot, which is keeping your employees happy in a great workplace and culture. And as we see companies, and we're going to talk about this a lot later in the show, but as companies are telling their employees to stay home, what's that do to your workplace culture?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. And, at a place like Lemonly, we had a little meeting yesterday to talk about what's our policy in this time of coronavirus and COVID-19. And for us, it doesn't change much because we are pretty used to working remote. But I think companies who will be forced into that currently probably aren't ready or built for it. And so you have to think about how does culture move beyond just four walls? And so, for instance, if we do like a food thing, and we do some sort of like internal lunch, or we do a wellness task force, so we'll cook like a healthy lunch once a month, we then actually send like we'll PayPal or Venmo $7-$10 to our remote employees so that they can go out and purchase a healthy lunch. And so that's just an example of thinking about how culture spans beyond just a building, right? It's not just a physical place. It's more of a feeling and an ethos. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things we talked about. And you're right. I think it's fascinating right now. Remote work is going to really get a litmus test here from a lot of companies who maybe aren't used to it, but now are going to be forced into it. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll delve a lot more microscopically into that in a little bit. Jeff Litterick joins us from Peer. He's with us from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications. Jeff, we're talking about viruses. We're talking about them on hardware mostly. And now we're talking about viruses and people, and it's an interesting impact. Has policies are revised. When I think of state government, I think of this big machine that's got policy books full of stuff. And this isn't, as a crisis comes about, this is not new. There have certainly been floods. There have been other viruses and other things. Have you noticed any difference in reaction to this, or is it just get the playbook off the shelf and work from that because that's the tried and true thing? We may have lost Jeff. Or he may be taking time to think, to ponder that. But but what I can tell you is there's been a, you know, there are policies in place, certainly. They're not published anywhere, but because they're kept fairly secret for obvious reasons. But this is not the first, people would not be thinking about this for the first time.
No, and the type of policies that you're probably referring to, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but would be things that that relate to disaster recovery. And disaster recovery can fall into a lot of different areas. And the thing that we, you know, my mind or most people always go to is what happens if the building goes away, or there's a tornado, or there's a flood, or something like that. But certainly, pandemics and epidemics and these sorts of things can affect it as well. Because if you're in a situation where your employees can't come to work, now what are you going to do? How are you going to have that business continuity so that things continue to move forward? You don't, you know, you lose out on the minimal amount of dollars possible, and still continue to move forward. And that's actually one of the big issues that's people are questioning right now is, if you aren't already in a position to have 100% of your workforce working remotely, when it comes time to do that, is the infrastructure that allows them to work remotely going to be able to handle all of those workers? And in some cases, yes, and in some cases, no. And so we certainly have lots of customers who are ramping up, who are putting in more VPN connections and bigger boxes to be able to handle more traffic and that sort of stuff. But certainly there are playbooks to go by. What happens when we can't work at our facility? And that's whether it's a flood, a fire, or a pandemic. And hopefully people have that jotted down, written out, and have tested it, right? Because if they put it together 15 years ago when the company first started, and it's a completely different ballgame today, it might be a little bit tougher.
So certainly something you have to stay on top of. And I believe Jeff is back with us.
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I understand. Technology is great when it works. So let me revise the question a little bit. In your opinion, how positioned are we, and not just state government, but I guess in general, to make this major shift from working at a desk or in a cube to at least for, let's say, you know, the CDC is saying 2 weeks. They came out yesterday and said, you know, you're going to be impacted for a couple of weeks. Be prepared. So, and I've seen, I spoke with a woman last night that works at Microsoft, and they were called yesterday and told stay home, work from home till at least the 25th of March, which is about a month. So how well positioned are we to just basically overnight in software and hardware for most folks that are working, that are information jobs and IT and things like that, how capable are we right now, or do things really need to ramp up for folks? Is there how big of an education are we in for?
Well, being from state government, you have to also remember there's some people that can't work from home. Your law enforcement, your firefighters, they don't get the option of being able to work from home. So we have to be able to support everything. And that also includes being able to support, you know, people that have to come in no matter what. So we have contingency plans that are always in place and get updated, you know, every time this kind of stuff comes around. You know, the DOT plow driver, if there's a snowstorm, you know, it's they're not working from home. And really can't. So we have a couple of different, you know, kind of things. As far as remote work, one of the things I'll mention right now is it's very possible, and it's actually pretty easy for most organizations. And it's what's interesting is Cisco, which is kind of in a lockdown, they said all their employees home, is giving away free WebEx licenses for team-based meetings and working from home for a set time. Google is doing the same for their Google Groups, their paid version, and Microsoft, if you have Office 365, is now given the paid version of Teams free for 6 months in relation to help organizations position themselves where they don't need to suddenly go out and buy a whole bunch of more remote type collaboration software. It will be free for the next 6 months. So that's a hopeful sign. But yeah, as an organization, one of the things we learned real fast was, you know, you also have to, in any kind of disaster, you have to specify your critical people also. Some people are just so critical, they just can't work from home or they need to be available to be on site. And those people need to be identified and those people need to, you know, be briefed and safety precautions taken and all that kind of stuff, no matter what kind of disaster. Because even, you know, we think about, oh, the tornado took out the data center. Well, the tornado also went through town and half your employees lost their homes and actually can't even work remotely. How are they going to work? Or they don't, or, you know, they need to take care of their families because they're all sick. Well, how much work even at home are they going to get done if they are sick? So you have to look at it as kind of a whole system in these kind of cases and build a plan around all facets if you really want to be successful when stuff like this hits.
That's a lot of impact. That's a lot of things to think about and a lot of policies to make and write. And thank you for that perspective. There are those workers that are on the front lines. Think of food service workers. And yes, it's okay to have your groceries delivered, but you've still got to have the people to do that. And you've got to have people to show up and do the work and do the delivery and get all those payments where they're supposed to be. And so as we think about the comforts of some of these services that have come online in the past few years, that does not mean everyone can work from home.
That's right. There's some things that just can't be done over the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's let people
choose. Yeah, that's where I feel bad. You know, it's the small business owners, it's the coffee shops, the restaurants, the retail places that are probably going to feel the pinch the most. And to the point where we haven't even really felt it yet, right? It's going to be probably downstream months to come or even quarters to come as we look back on, you know, 2020 and how businesses maybe didn't meet their goals or it was harder to keep the doors open. You know, we're lucky at Lemonly. I suspect that we'll see an impact even downstream with some of our clients and their budgets, but like we can at least keep doing our work because we work on computers and we can work from home. And so, yeah, I think that's a really great perspective to remember.
Very good. Well, we need to take a quick breather. We'll let people soak that in and maybe think of some questions for us. We are a listener interactive program. If you do have a question, we will try to provide that answer or some perspective on it. On Facebook, we are simply facebook.com/techradio. You may post your comments or questions there. Please don't be shy. Send us a text. It's 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. And if you're on Twitter, it's @KentSDPB, and of course the email address inthemoment@sdpb.org. When we come back, we'll have much more. We'll talk about, again, the impact of the virus on media and how the good, the bad, and the ugly has spread using technology after this. And welcome back to this March 6th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. Again, I'm Kent Osborne, and we have the computer guys here talking today. Amos Aesop from Exigent, John T. Meyer from Lemonly, and from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications and Peer, Jeff Litterick is with us today. And we are, I don't want to call it a virus special or anything, or a big focus on the virus, but that's what's really dominating the news and impacting people's lives. And so, obviously, this program is a reflection of that. And John, you had mentioned in an email earlier this week to me that you wanted to talk a little bit today about really the speed at which technology allows information to travel, and particularly information around this virus. There have been a confusion of facts, maybe on Twitter. I shouldn't say the word maybe. There has been a confusion of facts on Twitter. You've got people from the CDC and from government saying different things at different times, and so those information systems that we have, the media and social media, tend to be sending out mixed messages right now in some cases, and there's a concern about that.
Yeah, I think what's been so fascinating, and I want to make sure to be clear about not speaking from a science or a health standpoint in terms of the virus and what I think the severity is or is not. But I do think from a media and tech perspective, it's been pretty fascinating, right? Like the numbers and the data, it feels unprecedented, but we have had, you know, SARS and avian flu, H1N1. Like we have had these things happen before, these pandemics, but we haven't had them in the 2020 media landscape, right? So even Twitter, which I think was started in 2007, just wasn't what it is today in terms of all the media companies being on there, and now individuals basically becoming media companies of their own with massive followings. And so what I found so interesting just in the last 2 weeks is the speed in which information has traveled, some fact, some fiction, the speed in which then how, because that information travels so fast, the markets and the economy then also move quickly. And then even thinking about technology from that standpoint, you know, it used to be, hey, I'm thinking I might want to adjust my financial portfolio or my retirement portfolio, so I better schedule a meeting, go down to Bob's office, sit down, talk to him. He'll sign the paperwork. He'll put in a trade 2 days later. You know, technology's changed that too. We saw this week, you know, Robinhood, which is an app that lets you buy and sell stocks basically with a touch of a button from your phone. They had a lot of angry users because they had outages. It was over flood, and the app wasn't able to scale with all the demand that was going on because people were trying to, you know, either buy the dip or sell the stocks or whatever their goals were. And so I just think you're seeing a lot of hysteria, truthfully, some rightfully so, and some probably misplaced, but because of the speed in which technology has changed our world.
Okay. That's some good examples. I find it interesting that, you know, in the early days of this crisis, the jokes that were going around. So it was named the coronavirus. So obviously, you know, all the memes are about beer, and one beer in particular. And of course, their sales tanked for completely ridiculous reasons.
You know, I forget where I saw it, but last night I saw some news examples. Some sample news stories where they were talking about questions that people had, and some of the questions were, is it a good idea to gargle with bleach? Will that keep the coronavirus away?
Oh, man.
Can I get the coronavirus from eating Chinese food? There were some other absolutely ridiculous ones that one would hope that people were being silly and trying to put some humor into it. But at the same time, there's just so much misunderstanding on what the coronavirus is and how you get it and how you can stay away from it and that sort of stuff. And then, of course, we saw in the media as well some of the racism that has taken place because of people just assuming that if you're from those areas that you might be infected as well, and so we need to stay away from them. And so, you know, misinformation flows so quickly, and you know, as fast as real information does too, but it's difficult to kind of weed through that and who do you believe, and unfortunately, are people actually searching that out, or are they reading the first thing that pops up that might be the most spectacular or outlandish or worth repeating to somebody else because it's over the top?
Go ahead, Jeff.
And the information is just so fast. I kept kind of going back to an example earlier this week, in that Amazon put out a notice to all the sellers, don't price gorge on masks and stuff. And then the news came out later that day about how you really shouldn't get masks and stuff like that, because it doesn't protect you unless you really know what you're doing and stuff like that. But by the time those had come out that morning, because I was just taking a quick look, everyone had already sold out. Mm-hmm. The panic, once that information got out, within a couple of minutes, everybody online was sold out or price gouging. Stores, I've been hearing about stores where people if you weren't there within the first hour of opening, like on this Monday, all the hand sanitizer, cleaners, everything sold out, wiped out. The information just flows so much faster that it's about almost a day ahead of the regular, what you consider regular news outlets. They're kind of almost a day to two behind in trying to quell stuff that's already happening, being out of hand.
Yeah. Yep. And
then I think, and then, you know, this is where, because of that speed, and I'm married to a former journalist, it puts a lot of pressure on media and journalists to feel like they need to catch up and be able to report the story, you know, immediately. And that's troublesome too. You're seeing on Twitter today this video going viral from, I believe it was Brian Williams' show on MSNBC, that took a tweet where a woman tweeted that, you know, Bloomberg spent $500 million on his campaign election before, of course, suspending his campaign this week. And there's 327 million Americans. You know, he could have just given each person $1 million and still had money left over. And these two people, journalists, Brian Williams and a person from New York Times, discussed that tweet and just say how crazy is that that could have happened? I mean, they didn't even stop to do the math that would be trillions of dollars, not millions of dollars. You know, and this is on live TV, right? And so it does create this this rush, this panic to be the first to run the story without a lot of fact checking. And yeah, it's dangerous. It causes, the trickle down effects are bigger than we realize.
And that one's not even fact checking, right? I mean, that's just doing the math in your head.
That's math. Yeah.
500 exactly. million can't go to 350 million that many times. And I actually saw a post that had that same tweet on it, and I think it was a retweet though, and then the amazing amount of hate and vitriol below that, being so angry at Bloomberg for not distributing that $1 million to everybody. And it must have, you know, I guess I didn't go through the whole thing, but there was certainly more than a dozen tweets below that were very angry about it. But those people also didn't do the math, the 350 into 500 kind of math. People are just seem to be there seems to be a trend to how can I respond quick enough with something that is memorable and what we used to call a soundbite back in the day, right? I mean, do soundbites really even exist anymore, because they're everywhere and
that's the norm now? Yeah.
And so people are just quick to jump on that bandwagon because it's the bandwagon of the minute, as quickly as things.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but you see this on online forums all the time about, you know, if you're not in the first 10 comments, you've already wasted your time and stuff. Yeah. And people trying to reserve like their first or second comment in lines until they get their real thought in there. It's just a speed issue, and everyone just kind of needs to slow down and process information before kind of jumping kind of off the pier so fast at just a little bit of information that you don't know if it's truthful or false.
I saw an interesting cartoon and said, you know, a week ago we were all political analysts, and now all of a sudden we're all epidemiologists.
Yes.
And, you know, we're all experts in all this. But I found it somewhat alarming and amusing that Tito's Vodka, they're made in Texas, has been replying to tweets from people saying, hey, you know, so the hand sanitizer sold out, so people are making their own. And you can legitimately do that with the right ingredients, but one of them is definitely not Tito's Vodka. And that's what they were saying is, hey, Tito's, you should be capitalizing on this. You should be selling vodka because, you know, you mix this with aloe vera and, you know, you got sand sanitizer. It's like, no.
I've also been hearing this from tequila manufacturers, from all sorts of alcohol manufacturers, that people are trying to use them as a sanitizer, and that's not quite correct.
No, it's not. And so they came out, the first series of tweets from Tito's is very much, this is what the CDC says. This is what you should definitely not be using our product for this. And now it's getting into, I think they're relaxing a little bit and saying, you know, let's enjoy our vodka in a different way. but again, it is not a sanitizer. So, is it folks that are just trying to get a rise out of people, or is it folks that are truly a little disturbed by the facts of the day, and they're anxious, and they're that's just their personality, is to grasp at anything.
And there are those folks out there that are.
Oh, Yeah, it's clearly both. I mean, it affected Corona so much, the beer, that I've heard they're actually offering a few million dollars if people change the name of the virus to something else.
Yeah.
Because their business is so far, because everyone's scared that they could catch it from that. When a little bit of common sense, and you realize that's not how you catch the virus at all. It has nothing to do with it. But, you know, someone makes a joke, and then people run with it, not realizing it's a joke, and then it kind of gets out of hand fairly quickly because fear kind of takes over.
And that's
sort of point.
That's probably what go ahead, John.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, not trying to be a scientist, but COVID-19 really would be the accurate name because of coronavirus. Right. There are other we've had coronaviruses in the past, right? That's more about the origin of where it comes from. It's the internet, right? Once a name or a brand happens, off it goes.
And you kind of see this everyone's seen kind of some of the videos and stuff where people are blaming Chinese people and stuff for this that have been circulating. And, you know, and it just happened to start there. We've had other viruses like that started in the Middle East, that started in Europe. It can start from any place. But it's being, I've been hearing stories like if in China, if you're from that province, you can't even get taxi drivers will not stop for you. They ask you where you're from. And if you're from that province, they will not pick you up. They will not provide rides. And I'm hearing this in Europe and all this stuff where it's kind of a little bit, people are getting really scared and it's just all overhyped. Because remember right now, there's still only 100,000 confirmed cases out of the billions of people. Even in China, if they had 10 times that, they have billions of people. It's not as widespread as people think it is. You do have to protect yourself, but it's not the disaster everyone is thinking it is at this point.
Yeah. Certainly in South Dakota, we're a little insulated at the moment. Less international travel, less exposure to the risk. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but we certainly have the usual time that South Dakotans have to react to things like this.
We do. We've got a little longer period. But the things that we are being affected by, and this is for me personally, is I've had two major conferences that I was going to attend be canceled, one in Las Vegas and one in San Jose. And there's other conferences that are happening that are sometimes in the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, that this then takes away that economy that would come from that as well. Flights then get canceled, and I have not experienced yet myself, but I've heard that there's some leeway on, changing your tickets or canceling your tickets through the airlines, which would be awful nice of them. there are effects that are being felt here, even though we might not have any confirmed cases yet.
I mean, the airlines are they'd be happy to do that because they're just looking for customers right now.
Right.
They're saying it's as worse as a 9/11 in terms of people not wanting to fly right now. So many of them are starting to cancel flights because there's just nobody on the flight. So this is, economic. It's probably going to be a bigger economic impact in the end than it will be a health impact, especially for most people, because most people, it's a mild flu, unless you are in those risk groups, and then you need to be protected. But it's going to affect everybody sooner or later, and it really doesn't matter where. I mean, it's kind of a steamroller effect. I mean, we know shipping is way down off the West Coast, like almost 35% off normal traffic volumes, which is going to impact, even raw materials that people in South Dakota need to make other stuff. It can get scarce. And then how do you keep those people employed when there's nothing to produce because you can't get your parts and supplies and materials? So hopefully this clears fast, but it's going to impact everybody. It's just going to be kind of down the line a little bit.
One thing I've been thinking about is what is the, what's the, maybe it's more the optimist to me, but what's the long-term, more societal impact of how this changes? So obviously the immediate problem is here right at hand, things we just talked about and being smart and being safe. Your remote work is going to have this sort of test run here from a lot of people. Is the infrastructure in place? Are the tools in place? Are the policies in place? I think you're going to see some of these, like, do some of these conferences go remote or virtual, and then even turn out that they have a just fine or even better experience. Who knows? I'm just speculating, but I do think there's going to be a larger societal look at how we live our lives, how we shake hands, how we work together in large groups of people, that we might see a slight change in just in the way we live. And so I think that's going to be interesting long term, and that's still very, very much TBD.
I've already seen an article about how the handshake in its current form will be eliminated entirely. And well, maybe for a little while, but I don't think it's going to be long term. But people are pretty kind of discussing that. Sorry, they're kind of jumping ahead of the game a little bit, but it will be interesting because it will have a lasting impact for the better or worse to a certain extent. So,
well, with the information age as it is, we'll know pretty shortly the impact on these conferences that Amos is talking about. I'm not sure which ones you were talking about, but I know Facebook has canceled F8, mm-hmm. which is their big dev conference.
Google, there's. Canceled theirs.
Adobe.
Surprisingly,
did they? And Adobe. Okay.
South by Southwest is, as of now, still happening next week, which is really interesting. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands.
But
of people.
A lot of major Why? People have pulled out already.
Yeah.
Correct.
That, yep. So. I know National Association. We slow down. National Association of Broadcasters has their big conference in Vegas, and that's coming up. And
that's
people are kind of
that's
a huge conference. And on the tech side, on the hardware software side of things, in the later years, but it's, you know, as far as satellite trucks and Sony always, you know, makes a good showing, and Panasonic and all the companies that produce cameras and all the media technology. That's the conference, and people come worldwide for that. And we're starting to see cancellations and other things there. Red Hat canceled their summit, but they're turning that into a virtual event. So I guess when I started this out by saying we'll know the impact pretty immediately. As some of these conferences turn into virtual conferences, we're going to know the answer. Was this a success? Because we can see how many people come in the virtual door and how long they stay, mm-hmm. and we'll get reaction to that as soon as it's over. So,
and one thing that's also interesting is a lot of companies, and this is some of the cancellations and stuff for Southwest, are actually banning travel for their employees, especially critical employees and stuff. They're actually banning any kind of long out travel. They want their employees to be home and protected and safe. And that's going to also have lasting impact and stuff, depending on how companies look in the future, for future, you know, epidemics and stuff, how fast they, you know, cancel and what kind of lock people down. So, you know, I think Sony's one of the big ones right now that basically has canceled almost all travel plans. I know Amazon, Cisco, and Microsoft has sent all their people home because they actually have people in there that have been tested positive in their headquarters, at least for Amazon and Cisco. So those employees were told to go home. You're not traveling. You're going to stay home for a month in some cases. So, you know, is this going to be a lot of virtual stuff going on? And you can tell because the companies are giving their virtual collaboration stuff away for free for a while to get people interested in it so that maybe they like it and buy it later on after the panic is over. But this is going to have some lasting impact and going to make people think about how they do some stuff in the future.
Yeah, corporate travel was certainly one of the very first things impacted, restrictions on international flying, and then lately even out of state travel. Is being restricted in many cases. Again, you're taking your best employees and not exposing them to possible risks in different places.
Well, and not only that, but even if they're healthy and they're not the ones who are in the high risk categories, they could still be able to transmit the virus. They could bring it back to somebody who knows they're high risk, doesn't go anywhere, doesn't leave, but has that. What was the Kevin Bacon thing where it was 6 degrees of separation, right? Mm-hmm. Where you got that degree of separation away from somebody who has that full-blown diagnosis to somebody who, I'm not going anywhere, I'm just staying here and working. But you get a couple people that transmit it, that not knowingly. And that could be a problem as well.
It was the lament of the Microsoft employee I spoke with last night. She's home for the rest of the month, but her husband is still required to go to work.
Well.
So there goes that that moat, you know, around the castle sort of a thing. He's still needs to go out daily, and again, they're in King County, so there's been 12 deaths up from the virus. Mm-hmm. So they're at ground zero, and she feels pretty good about being able to stay home. But then, you know, husband who she loves needs to come home every night.
Right.
So very interesting. Interesting impact on travel and folks' work. We do need to take another quick break. We come back. We'll talk more about virus, or we got a few other things on the docket we need to dispense with today as well. But we'll get to that after this. Again, your questions and comments are certainly welcome. 956-STPB, that's 956-7372, to shoot us a quick text. In the moment at sdpb.org, the email address if you want to drop us a quick email, and we'll get it on the show today. And we are back to the third and final segment of In the Moment Tech Radio. It's the March 6th edition. I'm Ken Osborne. Joining me, Amos Aesop, John T. Meyer, and Jeff Litterick are all here. And we have been, I guess, spending the majority of our time talking about the impact of COVID-19, or commonly known as the coronavirus, on technology and technology's impact on information distribution as well. Another interesting anecdote. So fan letters and a poll and an opinion were relayed to the studio that's releasing the new James Bond movie, No Time to Die, no pun intended there, have asked that the company delay the release of the James Bond movie. And the reaction was...
And they already have.
Yes, till November. So that's not just a little delay. That's not just, you know, a couple of weeks in the summer when, you know, a lot of the prime movies hit. That's a big delay. And when you think about that, now it's there. I guess there's more time for advertising or for the hysteria to go down or whatever drove the fans to want the delay. I'm assuming they don't want to go sit in crowded movie theaters right now.
But yeah, let's be honest, right? This isn't because some fans said we should do it. This is a financial move, clearly. You probably don't, like, if this Friday, if today was your blockbuster launch of your film, that's not ideal. That you're hoping that hundreds of thousands of people get together in groups in small contained rooms together. So I think it's a pretty purely financial move, which, you know, in the way that our media works in 2020, like, this is probably going to benefit them. Like, it's earned media now. Everyone's talking, like, we're talking about it on the radio, right? Mm-hmm. More people are aware of this James Bond movie now, even though it comes out 6 months later.
I actually didn't know there was a James Bond movie coming out. So,
See, there you go.
There always is.
Yeah. And one of the considerations, and you may see this with some other big movies and events going on, and it's not so much in America, but especially international, because James Bond is a big international kind of hit in China and all the stuff, is a lot of countries are banning gatherings of people of certain sizes or any gatherings of people. So at least for the next couple months to help stop the spread. So, you know, you can't have the big premieres, you can't have the big events, the big concerts. I think in France, the limit's 5,000 people. Well, how are you going to have a concert unless it's below 5,000 people? And even then, the people are good at what the band's going to be afraid to do. So I kind of see where worldwide it makes a sense for a lot of events. We don't have these kind of bans in the United States, but in Europe and many other countries, there's bans on gatherings already in effect. So
I think there's at least a tournament that's talking about holding basketball tournaments, both without the fans, without the audience.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, the biggest soccer game in Europe is going to be held with just the players on the field and the referees and nobody else. No stands, no, you know, nothing allowed in the stadium.
And as long as we're on the sports topic,
there's
the conversation about the Olympics, right? And whether or not that's going to go on.
Oh.
Because that's based in Korea this year. And so...
Actually, Japan.
Is it Japan?
Korea. Okay. Yeah.
And that would be unbelievably expensive. Because of, you know, the rights that NBC has paid to to be able to film and broadcast and that sort of stuff, to lose out on that, because I don't know, you don't get your money back, right? Because the money hasn't been, there's no money to get back, because if the Olympics don't happen, there's none being made. That would be a tremendous blow as well.
Yeah, and Japan so sad, is kind of a focal point of the virus right now, in that they've actually closed all their schools. All Japan schools are closed for like 2 to 3 months now. And I know there's been two solutions: postpone the Olympics for a year, or hold the Olympics but don't allow spectators. Just televise it, and then you can protect the athletes better, because there's a limited number of athletes in their interaction outside of the village and stuff with the normal populace. But, you know, they're still hoping to have it, but who knows what's going to happen. Japan's kind of one of those very big, epic hotspots that's kind of exploding right now.
John?
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking about that. If it's a postpone or a delay, you know, so much for those athletes, how sad that is. So much preparation goes in to the Olympics, and so much timing, right? If you're trying to peak your peak athletic performance at the right time, in the right place. There's just the impacts continue to go with so many things we haven't even thought of.
Is it better to hold the event and not have the screaming fans as an athlete? Or is it, obviously it's going to be telecast, or is it better to delay and have the full experience and have the travel and the obviously the economic impact of not having those fans there? And the athletes and everybody's the supporting crew as well, is going to be immeasurable at this point.
I was curious if that ever been canceled before, and it looks like, according to Wikipedia, it's been done 3 times, and it was all because of war in 1916, 40, and 44.
Back then, right, the true purpose or spirit of what the Olympics are about, which is, you know, competition, community, connecting the whole world around these events. That is the purpose of the Olympics. But as we know today, it's a money-making machine for so many people, with so many brands, the media companies. You know, so what ultimately is the reason we make decisions? It often points toward the money column. So I think that's what you're going to see in terms of what happens.
Okay. But the technology is there in this day and age to be able to hold it without the spectators and still get it out. I mean, yes, NBC kind of holds the TV rights and stuff, but if they really open it up, you may even get more people enjoying it without the spectators if they did it right, because the technology is certainly there to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have placed an article from Wired Magazine on our Facebook page. And you can, if you don't use Facebook, that's okay. I think I'm allowed to say go to wired.com and for this article, but it is how to clean your electronic devices, because there are some do's and don'ts if you would like to keep your tech clean. And this is something you should be doing anyway, despite COVID-19.
Kind of like washing
and
your hands.
And what's going on right now? Yes, you should be using your hand or washing your hands after using the restroom. These are things we should be doing anyway. Well, Wired has come up with some suggestions, because it's fairly easy to destroy some of the coatings that are on your. There are things put on the glass of your phone to keep them resistant, water resistant, and other things. Good things. So you can, it's that thing. So you can just kind of wipe it on your, on your pants or whatever, and it kind of comes clean. That sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you were to grab a Clorox wipe or a Lysol, whatever, I've actually seen people grab Purell and this is not good for technology. it's not good for your monitors. It's not good for really anything. Keyboards and mice are a little different. One, they're not as expensive, and they're not, the finish on them is not, you're not quite so worried about it, but your actual tech. But go ahead, Jeff.
Do you remember for germs, the computer keyboard at your office or home is considered one of the very top germ hiding worst infection mechanisms possible, actually. So, because everyone's touching it, everyone's putting their fingers on it all the time. Mm-hmm. You need to clean your keyboard regularly, especially if you're sharing it with a family.
Yep, shake it out, blow it out, and then you know, use some sort of there are lots of products out there that, you know, from the goo that you just sort of roll across that Joel used to talk about. Mm-hmm. There are other things, but I just, you know, my keyboard and my mouse are not that high tech and that expensive. If I ruin the finish on them, I'm really going to care.
Right.
So I went ahead and grabbed a thing and
a Clorox wipe would be just fine.
It was just fine for me yesterday, but that's not the simple solution for everything. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice Wired article that talks about how to properly clean your kayak and not destroy it.
Yes.
And we can't, you know, dispense all of that information on the air today, nor do we know exactly what kind of phone you have, because some phones are more water resistant than others. Some phones are a lot more finicky. You better keep water and alcohol and things away from the ports and the cameras and that sort of thing. So it really depends on the phone and the device you have and the manufacturer's recommendation on it. But this is a good starting point, and it gets us thinking about these things that, again, we should be doing anyway. Mm-hmm. Maybe every week, maybe every couple of weeks, put a little tickle in your calendar and say, yeah, you know, I'm cleaning the office anyway. We need to clean these surfaces, because we've all seen the reports from certain restaurant chains that have touchscreen displays, and the swabs from those are horrible.
Yes.
So despite the fact that we've been talking about the virus all hour, that's not the reason why I'm suggesting this. This should be a routine anyway, but certainly it's not a gross reaction to a public health crisis at the moment, but something you should be doing anyway to keep your devices clean and keep you safe from lots of things.
Absolutely.
Viruses can actually live on glass on the surface of your phone. Certain bacteria and viruses for up to 96 hours. So, and again, we're not just talking about one particular strain. This is a lot of bad things. That's several days. Mm-hmm. And not saying you need to store it in a pack of Clorox wipes or anything, but just take the necessary steps to keep your surfaces clean, and your tech will like it too, because it'll probably run better if it's been cleaned out and is all fresh and good for you.
That's right.
Anyway, we have come to the end of another hour of Tech Radio on In the Moment. I want to thank my guests today, Amos Asop from Exigent. Thank you so much for your insights today, Amos. John T. Meyer, certainly love hearing your insights on the impact of working at home on the workplace and the workforce, and we'll keep talking to you about that in the future. And Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer, thanks for keeping us safe and all our machines working. Everyone, have a great weekend.